This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. We're here every week, and we enjoy talking to you about different subjects that we think are important and educational and topical for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. So, of course, in the last couple of weeks, we've been concentrating on the number one aspect of our life, and it's how COVID is affecting us. And we've talked about health. And we've talked about companies and organizations that can help you with your mental health and with your physical health, such as Compeer, who we just talked about recently, an organization. But now we're kind of swerving off to another aspect of your life, and it has to do with our jobs, with the economy, and that's probably our number one concern here, particularly as we said on Target, we talk about what's topical every week. And recently, I actually was looking at published information, and it was talking about the workplace and how local attorneys were answering common questions about how people could get back to work safely when the time comes, which is, I guess, I hope, fast approaching, and how the COVID regulations and restrictions would affect the workplace and workmen's compensation and workmen's employment and workmen's employees' sick leave and paid leave and all the different laws that would affect them while during the COVID and after COVID. And my guest, Matthew Miller, who is a partner at RUP, Bees, Fallsgraf, Cunningham, I got that, LLC, said many of his clients, employer clients, were overwhelmed by all of the different considerations they had to take into account during this COVID part, and that he had good advice and could help them get through this period. So I asked him if he would talk to us on Target, and here he is, right, live and in person through the miracle of radio and telephone. Hi there, Mr. Miller.
Good morning, Judge. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking time out to discuss this with my listeners. Let me just start out with, what do you do when it's not COVID? What would you call the kind of law that you're practicing?
Sure, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to your audience this morning. I run my firm's labor and employment practice group, and that's the large majority of how I spend my time advising organizations and businesses how to comply and deal with all the state and federal requirements that they have to deal with. And then I have a portion of my practice that I also deal with general corporate matters and business litigation. So it's a broad practice group, but it's trained me well for the things we're dealing with nowadays.
Well, ordinarily, what would some of the issues that you'd be dealing with pre-COVID?
Sure. So everything from daily HR and benefit advising of businesses, hiring and firing decisions, family medical leave issues, executive employment agreements, all sorts of things that help employers deal with the day-to-day employee-employer relationship and how to manage that.
I want to say that I've never myself been in a private, business. But, maybe 100 years ago briefly, but my daughter is with this very, very big organization. She's in public relations, and right now she's actually at Citi, which, as you know, is one of the largest corporations. And the most dreaded person in every workplace that she's had, an important person, it has been the, according to her, has been the HR, whoever the HR person is.
Yeah.
So every time I hear the word and you say the word that you work with the HR person, but their responsibility is, I guess, crucial, absolutely crucial to a successful company's operation. So now the question is, how has everything changed? What is happening with people trying to get back to in-person employment? Let's start with that. In-person? Yeah. Getting back into the office. we call it in-person, right?
Sure, yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. The HR professionals have immense responsibilities, and you know, in my own opinion, I think often are underpaid and overworked, like many others around town. But you know, things have changed drastically, you know, as everyone is aware in your audience. But from a business perspective, and I'm a business owner myself, so I have the unique kind of position of being a business owner and knowing how to run my own business and dealing with my own issues here at my firm, but also advising clients on that. And you know, how has it changed? It's really turned their turned their lives upside down. It's difficult enough to run a business successfully and manage your workforce and keep your people happy, because you know, businesses are only as good and successful as their people make them, right? So it was difficult before this, but now it's adding an immense responsibility on top of all of that to juggle, you know, all the new requirements and figure out how they deal and how they kind of intermingle and what you know, what that means for your workforce. How do we get them back? You know, some are back. We've got, you know, return to work guidelines and requirements that are in place from New York State. And if you can do that and do it safely, then that's wonderful. But a part of it beyond just, you know, the legal requirements that New York State is requiring for businesses to put in place to get people back to work, there's a non-legal component too. You know, there's a philosophical component to this. There's a, you know, the people at the top of each organization have to make decisions that if they're going to bring people back, is that the best decision for their business? Is it something they need to do, or can they operate differently? Can they change their business model that allows people to work remotely? Now, of course, as you know, Judge, that depends upon what industry that business is in. You know, some need people physically on site. You know, we're talking about restaurants, manufacturers, you know, any number of businesses. Others, you know, professional services like my industry, many workers can be efficient and productive away from the physical office. So it really depends on the scenario. But I think, you know, big picture, Judge, the overwhelming majority of employers are doing their absolute best and really, really are doing, you know, generally speaking, a good job dealing with all of these new safety and employer mandated requirements to get people back to work and stay in business.
Now, what are some of those mandates? I was laughing because we are at we're at Intercom Radio, and we are talking to you on the telephone, whereas usually in the old days you've been in the studio with us. And they have they're a big corporation, so it would be federal that they're following, probably, because they're not located in New York State. And they have requested, for example, a form be filled out before an employee comes into the building. And I don't know if it's a federal requirement or if they made the form up themselves, but I assume other businesses are doing something like that, where you would ask, where they would be required to find out the health of the person from themselves before they come back. Is that what would happen?
It is. You know, for example, I'll tell you, here at my firm, we have a daily screening questionnaire that employees are required to fill out before they come into the office every day, if they are coming in. And that's simple, basic questions like, have you been exposed to anyone with a known positive case in the last 14 days? Do you have, you know, A, B, C symptoms, you know, symptoms that have been proven to be symptoms of COVID-19 by the CDC and the Department of Health? Anyone in your family, you know, had those types of symptoms? There are pre-screening questions that we're required to fill out, and to a certain extent, you have to rely on, you know, the truthfulness of the employee filling those out. But from a business perspective, you're kind of taking on your responsibility and checking that box when they fill those out. But if somebody says, yes, I do, you know, I've had a fever of 100 since for the last 12 hours, well, that prompts a follow-up conversation with the employee or a request that person stay home. So it requires kind of a back and forth with the employee, but it has changed. And, you know, there are state requirements, there are federal requirements here in New York. You know, it's complicated, and it's tough for businesses to figure out where those federal requirements and state requirements begin and end, and how they kind of work together.
And as you said, some of those are relying on the person themselves to be forthright or honest or whatever. Also, I heard that, and you probably would know this, that before, as a company is employer or whatever, big, small, or whatever, however they are, is deciding whether to have in-person employees back, whether to have employees back, they might be doing some kind of a survey or talking to them beforehand or meeting or have pre-coming back requirements, so to speak, of feeling how do they feel about it and would they want to come back and that kind of thing.
Yes, you know, that's an ongoing conversation. You know, I think leadership at any number of companies, it's something they're constantly considering. If they've only brought a portion of their workforce back or are considering bringing everybody back, you know, they want to be in tune with the mindset of their employees. I think, you know, people want to work, right? And they want to provide for their families. It's difficult nowadays for everybody. And business owners want their business to succeed. So, you know, it's a mutual win-win to get people back and working, but it's got to be done safely. So, you know, the last thing business owners really want is bringing people back and having everybody, be upset about it, having a morale issue. So, you know, there are a lot of considerations to take into account when bringing people back, but surely, you know, one of those things that is a hot topic nowadays, and maybe you were going to ask me about this later, is can they require a vaccine? You know, the vaccines are out there now and at varying levels of eligibility, depending on where you live, and we know what those are in New York State, and supply is a major issue, but you know, a big question is, can employers require that, and should they?
You read my mind, but I think because COVID-19 vaccinations and the workplace, as you said, is a really hot topic, and I don't know if you know the answer, but I'm sure many of your employer clients are overwhelmed by everything that has to be taken into consideration. The question is, can they require them? Can they require vaccinations? Should they, I guess? And are they going to be responsible legally if anything happens? I guess one of the issues, because you're a lawyer, is who can be sued for what? Okay.
Very good question. Yeah. And my first response usually to that question is, how much time do you have for me to explain? The shortest answer, Judge, is yes. Employers can require employees to get vaccinated. We know that now as a result of some guidance that was issued by the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in December. We were kind of wondering if that was going to come out. As you can imagine, there are a number of state and federal anti-discrimination laws, disability protections, genetic information statutes that prohibit employers from diving into, you know, medical-related issues with their employees. But the EEOC has come out and said, yes, it is okay, but proceed with caution, because there are a lot of potential pitfalls that you could fall into as an employer by requiring vaccines and putting one of those programs in place. I could talk for hours about that. I'm not sure your listeners are interested, but the next question, and you touched on it, Judge, is should they? What I've been telling most businesses, is it's complicated. I think as safe as everybody wants to be, there are a number of different opinions about the vaccines themselves among the general population, including the workforce. It's impossible really to know how everybody feels about them, whether they think they'll be effective, whether they think they're proper. So my best advice to most employers is you can encourage it or should encourage it, but don't mandate it, because it's very difficult to administer, and there are a lot of hoops to jump through.
Don't mandate is probably what industries have asked most about requiring vaccinations to you?
Oh, good question. The hospitality industry has asked a lot. Manufacturers, industries that require workers to be in very close quarters and to be public facing, to be in close quarters with the general public on a regular basis. They want their workers to be safe. You know, the last thing they want is some bad press from an outbreak at one of their facilities, or to put people at risk because of an outbreak. Mostly those industries where there's a lot of close contact between employees themselves or the employees and the general public.
There's so many of those. I just want to interrupt. If you just tuned in today, you're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And our guest today is attorney Matthew Miller, and he is a partner at Rupp Bays Fallsgraf Cunningham, LLC, right? Okay. I'm reading it, so I know I'm right.
Yeah.
And he's an expert on employer relations and businesses, and we're learning a lot about what they can and cannot do regarding the pandemic. And now, I guess, just going back a step or two on this, you are must be always involved with the questions of when people can get sick leave, or when they're covered, or what kind of paid leave, and all that's going on now. Besides, that has to come up really a lot before COVID, and especially since, right?
Absolutely, Judge. It takes up most of every day of my work day. It did before, but it has increased a lot even since then. And part of that is because of my practice. Part of it is because I'm also part of my own firm's internal COVID response team. And so what's out there? Well, there are multiple state programs that provide for leave. There are federal programs that provide for leave. Many people will have heard of, you know, FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act, on the federal level. Here in New York State, there is paid family leave. But what is really at the front of everything now is New York State's paid COVID-19 sick leave, which is different from the paid family leave. And that really applies, you know, when an employee is subject to a mandatory or a precautionary quarantine or isolation order. And that order has to come essentially from a government agency. That gives people 10 or 14 days of paid leave, the first five of which are basically paid by the employer. Depending on the size of the employer, some things can change. But then the remainder of that quarantine order gets paid through a combination of paid family leave benefits and disability benefits. It's a complicated, tangled web that employers and employees who like to educate themselves have to try to figure out, depending on each particular employee's specific circumstances, whether they were exposed, whether they weren't, when, how, for how long. It's tough and it's time consuming, but there are a lot of programs out there now to provide paid benefits for employees when they need to be out, and job protection along the way.
Well, I guess this would be like in addition or instead of, I don't know how to phrase it, what the ordinary leave is, right? This exceptional, I mean, it's a separate law. So if you're coming under the COVID, you wouldn't have to count the days. I'm sort of simplifying this because, you know, I'm just simple.
Sure.
For our listeners. So in other words, if it was COVID, you wouldn't have to count it as your ordinary family leave or sick leave. Is that
right?
What we're saying?
It's totally separate from paid family leave. So it's a dedicated paid sick leave program for COVID-19 exposed or positive cases, and that provides a certain period of time. And we know now from new guidance that just recently came out that it's not just available to employees for one single use. It can be available for up to three times. So, for example, if somebody gets COVID-19 and they go out on this COVID-19 paid sick leave and they exhaust that benefit, they could be exposed a second or a third time, or test positive a second or third time, and still have that program available to them up to a maximum number of three. You know, we've also got a complication now this year, effective January 1st, where we have a brand new statute in New York State that was passed earlier in 2020 that just became effective called New York State Paid Sick Leave. Now, that sounds just like everything else we've been talking about, but it's also a new separate statute that provides, depending on the size of your employer, up to 40 or even 56 hours of paid sick leave in New York State for any number of conditions. And that's separate from the COVID leave, and it's separate from paid family leave, and it's totally separate from any of the federal benefits that may be available as well.
So there's...
that's a mouthful, huh?
No, because I'm sure this applies to many of our listeners, or they need to know, you know, that these are available to them. I bet you that they have to find out about all of this through going to the, I want to say, in quotes, dreaded HR person in their company, right?
Well, yes and no. So most, if not all of these laws and requirements impose an obligation on the employers to put their employees on notice. So, you know, in just about every business around town, you have a break room or a lunch room or some place where that employer posts required posters and notices about employees' rights in the workplace. You know, non-discrimination rules, maternity leave rules, whatever that poster might be. For the most part, that's where these notices or these posters are posted. Oftentimes, they're emailed around, or a business might put it right in what they call their employee handbook that they disseminate to their workforce. And so the onus is not generally usually on the employee to go to somebody to find out what it is. It's on the employer to let their workforce know what their rights are.
I see. And also, we're talking about like most of the time we're talking about large companies. Is there a differentiation? How do they decide if these laws apply to like a mom and pop store or a small business with 10 employees or something? Are there laws that discuss who it applies to, who they apply to?
There are, and that's a good question. So for example, I'll pick one of the statutes, the COVID-19 sick leave. There's basically four categories or five categories of employers based on size that spell out the benefits an employee would be required or not required but entitled to under that paid sick leave law and what employers have to do under those circumstances. So one example is if you have your business has 10 or less employees but you have an income of less than $1 million, the COVID-19 rules tell you what you have to provide. So somebody that's eligible for this leave and they're under a quarantine order, they get guaranteed job protection for the full period of that order. They can be compensated for the entire period of that order through, you know, an existing paid family leave or disability benefits policy up to a maximum amount by law. And that changes with each category. So, you know, if you also had 10 or less employees, but your business income was more than $1 million, then the requirements change and the entitlements change. And that's true also for, say, 11 to 99 employees or employers with greater than 100. The general thought being that the larger you are, the more benefits you're able to provide to your employees.
I guess it's sort of a discussion about minimum wage. It's the same kind of discussion as to whether, you know, who it applies to and how it's going to apply. And it's the same thing with the COVID regulations, because it could hurt if a lot of people were on paid leave and you have like five employees or something. It could bankrupt a business, a small
That's
business.
Right.
So that has to be taken into account, I'm sure. Tell me about the last few minutes that we have. Tell me what lawsuits, what you are afraid and what employers are afraid and thinking of that they might be liable for in a court of law that they might be sued for, like I'm not going to be slip and fall, call this one, or crash, call this one. But what are some of the fears that have to do with litigation, let's say, about over the vaccinations and COVID rules?
Sure. And I get this question a lot, and you know, businesses are afraid of it. But generally speaking, in New York State, an employee's exclusive remedy for something that they think their employer did wrong or an injury they suffered, through their course of employment is through the workers' compensation law. So that's not generally a lawsuit in a court that you might previously preside over, Your Honor. It's a different process. But when it comes to vaccines, for example, some people are questioning, well, what if my employer requires me to get a vaccine and I have an adverse reaction to it. I think that might implicate, the workers' compensation laws. If the employee didn't voluntarily, go into the program and they suffer some detriment as a result. Generally speaking, when you're talking about all the return to work requirements, the safe workplace, the OSHA regulations that require employers to provide employees with a place that's safe to work, that's more difficult. If it's not part of the workers' compensation program, where I see the difficulty from an employee's perspective is proving that an employer did something that caused that employee harm. So there may be, an employee may test positive, but how do they establish that link to show that it was actually something the employer did or did not do that caused them that harm? It's a difficult road to go down, and I know there's a lot of debate out there, state and federal level, about whether to provide employers some protection in that regard. It's just really early to tell because any cases that have been filed haven't yet worked their way through the system.
Right. But that's a great, I'm so glad I asked you that because it's so many have come up in so many different ramifications. I can't thank you enough. This has been really informative and it's been great talking to attorney Matthew Miller, who is a partner at Rupp Bass, Falls, Graff & Cunningham and a specialist in employer law. And we've been discussing all the issues that I hope that you might be questioning or thinking about. Thanks so much for talking to us. And hey, thanks for listening to On Target, everybody. Please join us again next week, and we'll be talking, I hope, about another interesting subject with a fascinating guest, just as we did this week. Have a good week, and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.